Well, we've been really focusing on this Ukrainian offensive in the northeast because initially it appears that it is one of the biggest military counteroffensives in Europe since World War II. And it's been remarkable at how fast the Ukrainians have been able to retake land and towns in the northeast with this offensive that we will continue to watch closely. But while we are watching that, further to the south, at Europe's biggest nuclear plant, the Zaporizhzhia nuclear plant that is in Ukrainian territory but has been controlled by Russian forces for months now, the Ukrainian nuclear agency is informing us now that they have shut down that power plant, shut down the power supply there. Let me explain. What they essentially have done is, in the middle of the night, the sixth reactor lost external power due to shelling. Early on Sunday morning, the Ukrainian operators decided to intentionally, for safety reasons, shut down that sixth nuclear generator after they were able to restore external power. It's a process called islanding. And what they are doing in the short term, it's to decrease the risk of an unintentional nuclear accident. But in the long term, it is still very precarious because it is not a process that is normally used in a normal situation. It is normally used only in emergencies. So moving forward, should the nuclear power plant in Zaporizhzhia need more power besides the internal power that they have now to shut down the systems, they would have to do that with diesel generators. That is clearly not an ideal situation, but they felt they needed to essentially shut down the nuclear power plant for safety reasons. So as we focus on the fighting in the northeast and the south, still the Zaporizhzhia power plant situation there is still in a very, very dangerous position.
Thank you for that update, Gabriel Elizondo, live in Ukraine's capital, Kyiv. Now, Ukraine's president says winter could be a turning point for reclaiming Ukrainian territory from Russian troops. But Volodymyr Zelensky insists to achieve those goals, more weapons and financial support are needed.
There are 90 days ahead which will decide more than 30 years of Ukraine's independence. 90 days will decide more than all the years of the existence of the European Union. Winter will determine our future and what the risks are.
Well, let's speak now to Maximilian Hess, who's a fellow in the Eurasia program at the Foreign Policy Research Institute. He's joining us from London. Very good to have you with us on Al Jazeera. What are your thoughts first about these remarkable advances by the Ukrainians? How do you think they've been able to achieve these breakthroughs so quickly?
Well, thank you for having me. The Ukrainians have credited their own counteroffensive that they announced at the end of August in the Kherson region in the south. They have said that this has distracted Russian forces and caused Russia to have to regroup and position a number of its most capable and most technically advanced units down there, which then enabled them to launch this counteroffensive southeast of Kharkiv and just northwest of the main fighting in the Donetsk region as well. The Russian Telegram community, this group of Russian bloggers who often travel alongside the Russian military and promote it, had warned of this, however, and have been quite apoplectic in complaining about it. So it's led not only to a battlefield victory, but a major propaganda victory as well.
Right. I was going to ask you, how damaging is this for Putin inside Russia if Russians get to see this? It's difficult to see how he's going to spin this.
I think what the Ukrainians have really been fighting for on the battlefield for quite some time now is ensuring that whatever victory Putin may achieve in eastern Ukraine in terms of taking more territory, that it's a Pyrrhic victory, that it's one that ultimately has major costs for him and undermines his governance in the long term. This backlash that we've seen in this announcement from these Russian right-wing groups is exactly that which they've been hoping to lay the groundwork for. Now, the Russian far right and these Russian nationalist groups that have been the ones who've really been carping about the military withdrawals, they are not politically unified, and where they are, it is very heavily controlled by the Kremlin. So it remains to be seen whether that backlash metastasizes into something, but it's certainly real and quite unprecedented in the level that we've seen it.
How might Moscow respond now, you think? They have a limited military pool. What plans do you think are being considered or are going to be put in place to respond to these advances?
Well, sadly, in relation to a number of other Ukrainian military successes or announcements of new initiatives, for example, in Kherson the other week, the Russians have then unleashed a barrage of missile strikes on Ukrainian cities and populated centers. So that's a real concern for the immediate future that I think people have to be worried about, from Kharkiv all the way to the west of Ukraine. Militarily, to retake the initiative in Ukraine, it looks like the Russians are already sending more troops down to the front there. There are areas where they've had more successes in the city of Bakhmut and its surroundings in northeastern Donetsk Oblast. So this major advance for the Ukrainians is a turning point, but the Russians do still have the capability to really put pressure on the Ukrainians at other points in the front and will likely launch their own counterattack in that area.
Maximilian, we also, the atrocities in Bucha, are you concerned? Should we be concerned that such atrocities could happen again as the Russians withdraw from territory that they occupied?
You know, the Russian atrocities that we saw there largely came during the occupation, although, of course, there were even further attempts to clean up their tracks as they withdrew. And I think that's a real concern for the Ukrainians. Also, the looting of industrial property in the area. So, yes, those are sadly real concerns. As I said, the most immediate one right now is the Russians have precedent for major rocket strikes on urban areas targeting civilian populations.
Yeah. In terms of talks and negotiations, we're not there yet, of course, but what would Ukraine accept if there were to be any peace negotiations? Or do you feel that Ukraine doesn't have to make a deal now that they've made these advances and are regaining some of their territory lost?
I don't think there's the political will on either side right now for renewed negotiations. In Ukraine, if Russia came and offered them a full withdrawal to the lines before the 24th of February, that may get them interested, but Putin and his regime have shown no intention of making that offer after this setback or after previous ones. So sadly, I think the ball is still really in the court of what will it take to get Putin to change his military aims and to recognize that all that he had hoped to achieve in February is not only impossible, but that he's getting further and further away from it as time goes on. Because any such move would have major domestic political ramifications within Russia, I don't think we should be expecting it in the immediate future. As sad as that is, I certainly hope that the Russian army and the Kremlin comes to that realization.
Thank you so much for talking to us. Thank you for your insight. Maximilian Hess from the Foreign Policy Research Institute in London.
Bye.